Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Two Norris podcast. I'm your host, James Leonard, joined by my good friend, Timmy Lamb.
Hi, everyone.
How are you, Tim?
I'm very well, James.
That's the job, that's the job. Rowan is on the decks as always. Say hi, Ron.
Hi, Ron.
Good man, good man. It's a beautiful summer's evening up here in Northwest Cork City, and we've got a great guest who is looking very radiant.
Yeah.
That goes with the sun. How are you, Joe?
Very good, thanks.
Joe O'Brien is from Ballyfihan. You're, among other things, you are a healer, a counsellor, a therapist, and a fit gent of a man.
Thank you very much. What a lovely introduction.
And thanks for coming up to meet us
here.
You're very welcome. You come recommended, not recommended, but for the last few months, a load of people have slid into our direct messages on Instagram saying, you should get Joe O'Brien on, get Joe O'Brien on, get Joe O'Brien on. So that's how I started following you on Instagram, and I seen your videos, which I thought like was great, and I said it to the boys, we need to get Joe on. So then I made contact, and then you kindly offered to do a couple of sessions, myself and Timmy, before we come on, which were amazing, and we'll get into that. But look, before we get into it, do you want to tell the people that don't know you who you are and where you're from and where you grew up, and just for a bit of context?
Yeah, okay. Obviously, I'm Joe O'Brien, and I'm what's called an EFT practitioner, which stands for Emotional Freedom Technique, otherwise known as tapping. And what this system is actually, I help people to help themselves move on in life from past traumas and energy blocks and trapped emotions, which is literally life-changing. From Ballyfihan, I'd be on like the outskirts of Ballyfihan, heading more towards up Friars Walk.
Yeah.
And I was born in the early 60s, where you could leave the key in the front door. And the neighbours could walk in at any time, you know.
Yeah.
And it was a wonderful time because everybody was the same. None of us had anything. You know, as the saying goes.
Yeah.
And your parents would probably say that. It was very little going around back in the early 60s. And I was the youngest of eight. And that's where the hand-me-downs came in.
Yeah.
And I had three sisters, thanks be to God. I didn't get any of the dresses, you know. That
You could have been called Geraldine.
It wouldn't have been unheard of, really, back then, like, to get the sisters hand-me-downs.
Yeah, probably not, you know. But I got away with that one, thanks be to God, you know. Yeah. But yeah, I've been at health and fitness all my life. I still am today, carrying a few injuries and stuff. But
did you ever were you ever in any particular sport?
Soccer.
What did you play with?
Tramore Athletic.
Oh yeah.
Casement.
Yeah.
School boys.
Yeah.
Played for Green Mountain Rangers then. Yeah. Was involved in martial arts.
What kind?
Shotokan Karate. I started in 1978.
Oh, very good.
In the most incredible club, and instructor, and my great friend, God bless him now, Mickey Donovan, from Groan. Mickey was a boxer for the Glen in his early days, and he went to the States and came back, and he started to learn Shotokan Karate. An amazing man. I learned so much from him, you know, the foundation, and it kind of sent me in the right direction in my life then as well with physical fitness, and it was an awful lot down to Mickey, you know, to be fair. And his brother-in-law was John McCormack, and he had Francis Hall Karate Club, and a lot of the other guys that might be watching this, or the ladies for that matter, will remember that. And they were fantastic times, you know. And the training was seriously intense, very hard. I remember I was training 5 nights a week, and I was also training Green Mountain Rangers myself. I was training them 2 nights a week, coming up to the League Cup and the AUL and the Enterprise Cup, which we won that year. It was in 82, you know. But very fond memories of Brown Street. And as I said, anybody that's watching this will you know, the heartstrings will start pulling there because they were great days, you know.
But do you know that type of karate What makes that karate different from other karate? Like, is it more about striking, or is it a grappling type of a martial art?
No, it's more about striking. Obviously, it's a very disciplined sport,
yeah.
And you can build some wonderful characters and confidence and wonderful ethics and respect, not just for the members of the club, but humanity in general, mm-hmm. you know. So that's why I take my hat off to Mickey. I learned so much from him. Really tough man, but the most caring, loving guy. Deep down inside,
when you're able to handle yourself, if you're trained like that, does that give you a certain air of confidence in situation that things kick off here and go and be okay anyway?
Well, I think everybody should learn or know some sort of a self-defense system. Mm-hmm. I think it should be taught in school. But the most important thing with the self-defense is not to get involved in the first place. Mm. Be very aware of your surroundings and who you're interacting with, and the discipline is of paramount importance. And to always walk away.
Always discipline walk away. This karate is known for having really, really good discipline, particularly with young kids growing up. And if the taekwondo is the same, you know, they start listening to their teacher and they start respecting them. And their teachers start teaching them how to respect people, and they calm them down. Because I've seen kids go into karate that were really, really hyper, and within no time, it calms them down and they start. Yeah. Finding an interest in it, and they start developing, and it's a great sport. It's just sport in general, but karate is definitely one that helps.
What did you do after school then? When you were early adulthood? And
after school itself?
Yeah.
I left school very young. I left school at 15. You could say no education, really.
Typical for the time,
you know? Yeah. And if you got a trade back then, it was fantastic because you could go into a trade back then. But I went working with my brother-in-law, who was a plastering contractor at the time, and just went working in the summer. And I was going to go back to school. He said, "Why don't you carry on working with us and do a bit of plastering, you know?" So I said, "Okay." I was only a kid, like. But I went back to school when it started on the first day. Imagine this happening out today, right? So I said to the teacher, "I've been offered a job by my brother-in-law as a plasterer, an apprentice plasterer." He said, "What are you doing here?" So I just got up and I left. I didn't even go to the principal, you know. Whether my mother took care of that afterwards or what, I don't know.
Gas times, aren't they?
Yeah. And I was back working. I was back on site the following day. And I've worked 42 years in construction as a plasterer.
Go ahead.
You know?
You were plastering for that amount of time, Joe?
42 years, yeah.
Fucking
Jesus. And I absolutely loved what I did. I did an awful lot of work up around the north side with all the fibres plastering and that, the cornicing and the coving and that, you know.
Yeah.
And the likes of the Derby O'Gill's pub now and that. And the old distillery, I did all the ceiling work and stuff like that in there, all the fancy stuff, so to speak. You know?
So all the other stuff, the energy tapping and stuff, was that something you'd done outside of the plastering and the side or what?
The energy stuff came about 15 years ago.
Yeah.
But there was a question posed years ago, where I was out with some buddies, you know, and somebody just said, "Hi, Gerald, you know, how long are you doing this? It's very interesting." And my buddy jumped in, he goes, "Gerald's doing this all his life." And I knew exactly what he meant because I've always tried to help people along the way before I even got into the therapy. And going back about 15 years ago then, I just something inside me said that I need to do something more because I had this unbelievable desire to really, really make a difference in people's lives. And I started studying, like I never studied before, to be honest with you. And I absolutely loved it, and I'm still studying today. I'm learning so much more besides what I'm actually doing as a therapist now, to be the best that I can be to make such a profound difference in people's lives.
Do you think the karate, I'd say the karate helped because, you know, I think, you know, like for Shaolin monks, they have their martial arts, kung fu, whatever it is, but they also have the spiritual side of it, the side where they keep themselves grounded and humble and centered. Do you have that in karate as well?
Yeah, you're dead right.
Yeah.
You're dead right. In fact, I've known of another few martial artists that went into the healing fraternity, you could say, you know. So there's something about it. And, you know, I was asked a question once, Joe. You were talking about spirituality. What's the difference between religion and spirituality? Well, I said, or the religious man and the spiritual man. Well, I said, the religious man fears dying and going to hell. The spiritual man has already been there.
It's true, so true, really.
True life's experiences. It's what you learn.
Yeah, and you going back to what you said there, we'll go, myself and James have done a few sessions with you there lately as well, and we've both had our own experiences. I haven't been really speaking to James about my own, but my experience, which I like, as you know, has been profound, really. It's after helping me an awful lot. To go deep into my own past, my childhood, and other shit that's gone on in my life, you know. And it's massive, you know. But I have a piece here, right? And it's the story of you helping somebody in a different situation, right? And I'm going to read it, if that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
On Wednesday, the 11th of July, I spoke to a very distressed member of staff who, during the conversation, said they wanted to slit their wrists. I convinced him to come into the meeting room for an informal chat. Myself and Joe Murphy sat down with him, listened, and offered assistance in the form of STS's in-house supports. That's the company supports.
That's the company, yeah.
He was in a very, very dark place, and he was disturbed.
Mm.
Joe thought Joe O'Brien, which is yourself, who has experience in this field, with the person's consent, Joe rang Joe, who promptly came to the meeting room. We explained the situation, and then both myself and Joe left the meeting room to allow Joe to proceed with his therapy techniques. After some time, Jor called us back into the meeting room and we sat down again for a chat. We found the person in question totally transformed for the person we had before us in the morning. We did not witness the therapy applied, but were truly astounded with the results. He had brought this person back from the brink of suicide. We are very grateful for the therapy given by Jor to a serious situation to which we found ourselves ill-equipped to handle. The person in question was back to work the following day and hasn't looked back. Can you explain what you actually done for that person on that day, okay, and how distressed they were?
It's great that you've brought this up, actually, Tim, to be honest, and I'm grateful for that because it's a very, very important topic.
Yeah.
And I was actually on site on a major pharmaceutical plant in Cork. There were several hundred men on it, okay? And I'd given several talks over 3 days, several talks a day to hundreds of construction workers on mental health and well-being. And the feedback I was getting was absolutely profound. Now, I was working on site, but I was trying to promote myself as a speaker at the time to go to construction sites and companies to speak about what I do and the benefits of what I do, how I could instill it in people that could make a big difference in their lives.
Mm.
So I'd given the talks and the company were aware that of what I had done, and I was back working on site. I was in my gear, PPS and everything, right? And I got a phone call off one of the directors from the company, and I went into the guys, and the two of them were very, very shook. They met me at the door and they said, "We've a serious situation here. He wants to take his own life. This gentleman, let's call him John, not his real name," and we'd become really good friends after this. And I went in and this guy was literally on his knees. He was traumatised. He was in bits. He was crying uncontrollably. Now, lads, I don't care how tough you are. Now, obviously, I had to compose myself. But when you look at another human being, especially a grown man, and he's literally on his hands and knees, and he's in bits, it's a tough one not to pull on your heartstrings. I'll tell you that now for nothing, okay? Now, to witness that, everything starts to go through your mind. But I know what I was doing. I'm trained at this. So I went in, three of us were in the room then at this point, and they said, "Will you be able to sort this out here? Will we get onto this company and that company and get somebody?" I said, "You can do whatever you want." They said, "This needs to be addressed now," because he was saying that, as I was talking to those guys, "I want to take my own life." And I went over and I just put my hand on his shoulder and I said, "What's your name, bud?" He told me his name. I said, "Look, I can help you this morning," I said, "if you allow me to." And he just nodded. So I said, "I'll take care of this," to the two lads. And they said, "You're anything you need, just come out to us, whatever." So I spent 3.5 hours with him inside in the room. And I performed EFT on him, with him. We spoke about lots of things. Now, what I'm going to say here, okay, is anybody can go through something like this in their lives. And what happened with this gentleman was there was a culmination of many factors over many situations, circumstances and events, mostly negative in his past life, that had brought him to his knees, okay? Now, this could have happened on an aeroplane. It could have happened in Marbella on his holidays, walking down Patrick Street. It hit him like a ton of bricks, okay? The volcano erupted, just couldn't take any more. So the culmination of many factors came up and he broke down uncontrollably. So we spoke about many things that had happened in his life, an awful lot of trauma. And we dealt with every single thing that came up in those 3.5 hours. And he was perfect after that. Mm-hmm. So I went out and I asked the two guys to come in. And when they came in, then when I'm talking about this story, lads, there's no ego here or nothing. I'm just telling you a story, you know what I mean? And I was just so happy that I was able to help him. But the two lads just couldn't believe the difference in him, you know? And he gave me a big hug, and there was no more crying. It had stopped, and he was back in work the following day.
What was actually going on for him in terms of the physical side, right? We just spoke about the trauma.
Mm-hmm.
He had a lot of energy, obviously trapped within his emotional state.
Yeah.
And you were able to work in him and to get him to talking and for him to connect with his subconscious and tap and just for him to release that trapped energy that's given him so much problems and not allowing him to continue with his life in the best way he can and should.
Absolutely. Like what had happened, as I said, there were so many factors in his life. It had come to a point that morning, and it was very early in the morning. I think it was about 8 o'clock. So thankfully, the two directors were able to get him into the office.
Mm.
I think he was outside when he was talking about it, and they brought him on site, you know. Mm. So thankfully, they got him in. But when I spoke to him again, like, we're as a result of our past experiences, okay, and we carry that through into our adulthood. And for the most part, it's trapped emotions and traumatic events. Now, everything has an energetic connection to it. Time, places and events and situations, mostly negative for most of our lives pasts. So all that came up, okay? There was a disruption in the energy body, and the cause of all known disease and illness is a disruption in the energy body. So I started working on the emotional content, and there was so much came up. There was abandonment, there was rejection, there was shame, there was anger, the love unreceived. It was endless what came up, trying to deal with the majority of it in the space of time. But there was so much coming up and I needed to address it at the time. But before I started with him, I had reassured him that I'd get him through this, you know, that I was there for him and that he was safe. Just to, you know, make sure that he felt happy and safe. So I went through the therapy with him and just started to release emotion after emotion. And how do I know the emotion is gone? I literally give a scale of 0 to 10. How intense is the anger that you're holding on to? Let's just say it's a 10, so I'll work on the tapping. And it always comes down. It eventually comes down and it starts to come down. Then we might work on the rejection that comes down. And before you know it, the breathing is better. You know, it's more controlled breathing. Mm-hmm. There's the complexion starts to change in the face. The body posture starts to change because we're literally releasing these energy blocks. And I'll explain it. That we have an energy body and we have a physical body, and the energy body lies just beneath the physical body, the physical skin, also known as the meridian system. And what I do is, I'm working, you could say, with Chinese medicine and modern psychology, what I'm doing, okay? So I'm tapping on particular acupressure points while we're verbalizing how we feel and how we felt, and we start to release that. Now, how does it work? When we tap on particular points, it sends a signal to what's called the amygdala. It's a little part of the brain that's responsible for the fight or flight response. And it's also partially responsible for the processing of emotions. Okay? And what happens is when you tap, it sends this healing energetic connection of energy to the amygdala. It starts to distress you straight away, instantly. It starts to lower cortisol levels, rebalances the energy body, and lots of more good things that come with it.
Mm.
Okay. So by just tapping alone, You're addressing the situations. And I'll put it this way, I'll use the analogy. It's like the energy body is like a fast-flowing river, okay? Just imagine a fast-flowing river and all the fish in it are healthy, there's plenty of oxygen and everything's going really smoothly. And over a period of time, there's a big rock falls into the river. So the river has to deviate around that, okay? Then there's a tree falls in the river. So the flow of the fast-flowing river starts to slow down considerably. So it has to deviate around the boulder, then around the tree. And eventually there's so much silt falls in from the sides of the river that it comes to a standstill and everything in the river dies and the oxygen is depleted. It's the same with the energy body. Mm. It's like having, we'd say, fear is held in the kidney or the bladder. If that's held in the energy body, that creates a blockage. So the flow of natural energy, chi, cannot flow through because of this very real blockage, which is fear. Okay? Anxiety. Everybody has anxiety today. Not everybody, a lot of people have it. Mm. They can associate with it. Anxiety is held in the stomach or the spleen. So that's another block. So when you're talking to somebody, where do you feel the anxiety? Not in my stomach. So the flow of energy is distorted again. It can't go through. So if you've got lots of trapped emotions, eventually disease and illness will start to manifest in the physical body because we hold on to so many trapped emotions within the internal organ system. Mm. So it needs to be released, and unresolved specific events and the emotional content that's related to these events needs to be released. Mm. Otherwise, we'll have mental health issues going forward. And I've always said it, okay? In my opinion, there is not a long-term solution for an emotional problem. I mean that medication-wise, okay?
Yeah.
Because you're suppressing the true cause of your hurt and your pain, which is a trapped emotion. And most people don't want to face their trapped emotions because of the hurt that it brings up. But the only thing we have to fear is facing our own feelings. But when you do face that fear, it falls away on its own accord. And it's life-changing and it's healing when you start to accept where you are at this moment in your life, offer no more resistance and just allow things to flow naturally. So it's imperative, and I've said this in some of the talks, and when I start getting into the schools, to teach children from a very, very young age to embrace their emotions, to feel them, to express them, because if they don't, this will lead to mental health issues down the line. So if we were taught at a very young age how to deal with these, there'd be very little mental health issues.
Mm.
This needs to be taught in schools.
As so many people are going to get an awful lot there from what you spoke about. You know, I knew a lot of it, but the way you explained it, the way you were able to articulate it, mm-hmm. would be a lot better than me, you know, because you're at it so long. And it's amazing how we trap all these energies from experiences, you know, and we live our lives running away from them because we can't sit with it because we don't know how to, we were never taught to, you know, and we end up using substances and alcohol and gambling and all these different addictions to be able to keep them down, you know, below the surface so we don't have to deal with them.
Yeah.
You know, and like, from my own experience the other evening with the energy, I felt my energy popping up through the top of my head. I felt the energies through, down through the ears with meditation. But this time, I just got killed there by Rowan for not holding the microphone. But this time, I could feel it immediately and we had a good conversation about it. And I could feel things coming up and I could feel it up the top of my head. It was like my head was just ready to explode, just pop, you know. Yeah. It does work. You know?
When you were doing it, when you were talking there about tapping, I start smiling, right? Because when you were doing it happened to me, especially on my chest here,
I
couldn't stop smiling.
Yeah,
and I tell now I was kind of pissed off. Do you know what we were speaking about? Like, do you know, managing anger now and trying to accept situations that are beyond your control and these type of how do you deal with that frustration and anger really, and then kind of feelings of, you know, being worthlessness or body image issues.
Yeah.
These are all the things that affect me that people mightn't think that, you know, people think, oh, James Enner, turn on his podcast, Tommy Tiernan, PhD, great, you know what I mean? I'm human like everybody else, you know what I mean? And I have my difficulties and my insecurities still, but I divulge some of it to yourself.
Yeah.
And as I was talking about it then, you helped me work through. But when you were doing the tapping, when you were tapping here, I couldn't stop smiling. The energy I got from it, it just... It's very hard to describe it because I don't really have the vocabulary to describe it because I don't really understand it. But what I did feel was something in my body, and it raised the energy, it's like positive vibration through my body. It was like smiling come over me that I couldn't even control it. And then you just have to... It's very hard to explain. Like, how did I feel in $1 million?
Yeah, but it was a massive shift. But like, it's a different experience for everybody.
Mm.
I can't say everybody's going to get the same results, you know. But I was asked this question on 96FM with PJ Coogan, going back there. And he said, you know, when I was on talking about what I do, and look, people are sceptical, that's fine. But PJ posed the question. He said, look, Joe, what would you say if people think all this is gobbledygook? So I had to pause for a split second and think, how do I respond to this one? And I said, well, PJ, closed mind is open to nothing.
Mm.
And I think that puts it into context. If we're open-minded to other things out there, you'll be very surprised what you learn. Maybe take off the blinkers and be open to learning, not just about energy therapy, but lots of more things in life, you know. Mm. But as we spoke about, everything is energy, as we know. But there's a quote from a gentleman by the name of Wallace D. Wattles, and he wrote The Science of Getting Rich and The Science of Being Well, and it goes like this. There is a thinking stuff from which all things are made, and which in its original state permeates, penetrates, and fills the interspaces of the universe. A thought in this substance produces the thing that is imaged by the thought. Man can form things in his thought, and by producing his thought can form things in the most wonderful way.
Makes a lot of sense.
Mm. Yeah.
But he can also produce thoughts that aren't so wonderful.
Yeah.
Correct.
Like you'll think, like you're thinking, and you might be able to articulate this better than me, but your thinking creates your reality, whether you like it or not, whether it's positive or negative.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know what? I messed that up and I tried to blag it there, but I'm going back to it halfway through, and I'm saying this for a long time, but I want to get it right. Man can form things in his thought, and by impressing his thought upon formless substance can cause the thing he thinks about to be created.
Mm.
Okay, so the more dominant you are with your thought in the nothingness, which is everything, which is energy,
field,
you can create it.
Mm. Mm. And that could be a positive and a negative thing.
Absolutely.
You know, because I have created negative shit in my own life through the negative thought patterns.
Mm.
You know, and I'll give you this analogy of an example of it. For when I got out of prison, right, I had this feeling ingrained into me, right, about the guards knocking at the door again for another fucking charge.
Mm.
And I said, fuck it. Every time there was a knock at the door, I'd picture a guard knocking at the door, and I was bringing up the emotions of the guard knocking at the door, the fear and the anxiety. Little to be told, I had an incident with a cyclist, and I attracted a guard at my door, and I knew then the feelings were already there.
Yeah.
I wasn't searching for anything new, but I attracted that into my life. Yeah. I attracted it in, you know. But you can also do the positive stuff. I've attracted positive stuff into my life, and they have came as well.
Yeah.
And I find that probably a lot easier.
I think, we create situations that mirror our thinking. And I think if Timmy's, and I've been in this situation too, dispute there, I won't get into it now because you could be watching and use it against me. Like, but we have this fear, me, Timmy, and probably many people like us, that when you've been through a situation like we've been through with addiction in prison, right, you have a criminal record, you're trying to move away from that old reputation you had.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to redefine who you are through education, through relationships, volunteering, work, podcasts, and all these other things.
Yeah.
So, and that's not me no more. That's what I used to be, but I'm a good person now, you know?
Yeah.
The thought that could be taken from you by another conviction, you know?
I understand that.
So then the stakes are very high. Mm. Like, we'd lose all credibility with the podcast, probably lose our jobs, and, you know, and everything we've worked towards can be taken with another conviction. So you're aware of that. Timmy's aware of it, and I'm aware of it.
Yeah.
So then we almost, if you get too fixated on that in the brain, you nearly create the reality. And I did have guards at my door as well, do you know? Mm. Nothing came, but no, there was nothing really, do you know what I mean? But it was just a little kick up the backside to say, don't be, do you know, let it go. You're going to be fine, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. But you get what you think of, whether you want it or not, so be careful what you think of. because energy follows thought. Now, you said like that you might be somewhat ashamed, that's not the word you used, yeah, from your past, and you're trying to move on, and that's not me anymore. But you are who you are now because of what you've experienced, mm-hmm, and they're just experiences.
Yeah.
So it's imperative that you embrace who you were, your younger self, warts and all, and everything that goes with it, because you wouldn't be you now unless you went through that.
That's true.
But you're not the person that you were now. Everybody evolves. I'm not the same person I was last week. Mm. Neither are you. So you've transitioned from the experiences, not mistakes, that you've endured in your life that's brought you to a point now, which is wonderful, which you're learning all the time. But don't ever fear the past, and don't ever be ashamed of what's happened, because it's moulded you into who you were, into both of you. And I have the utmost respect, and I've only met you. Mm. I take my hat off to you, and I mean that genuinely.
Thank you.
You've come such a long way, and I know I'm going to get to know you a lot more in the future, but don't ever be ashamed of what has happened. I know some of us will carry some things that we might have done and stuff, but for the most part, embrace it, accept it, heal, and move on.
Yeah, no thanks, is very wise words.
I think that's very important, what you just said there, for a lot of people listening to Gent, the move on section. Mm. Move on. You know, especially people that get into recovery and they've had a life of chaos and a lot of trapped emotion, and they can learn all the educational section, the intellectual section, to understand how the body works and why we feel the way we do, because of trauma and stuff. But if they don't feel it in here, it all this stuff up here really doesn't matter. No, and doesn't. I know that from my own experience.
And even people that are watching now, the people watching this now in residential treatment centres, prisons,
brilliant,
people in houses, brilliant, here around Cork and beyond, do you know, that might be everyone through very tough lives, very what might be perceived as negative experiences, but they didn't kill you. You're still alive. Yeah. You're watching this podcast. They're going to build your character.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, one thing I will say, it's not that I hope, I don't like using the word, I'm sure it will resonate with a lot of people, that if we don't learn to heal the pain from the past, we will bleed all over our future.
Mm, that's a good one.
We need to move on.
That is a good one. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I've never heard that one before. No,
it's mine.
Is it?
Yeah.
That is natural. We
journal
will.
Mind. Yeah. No, that's a great. It's a great way to put it.
We'll have to get that patent and copyright or whatever. Yeah.
But can I just shoot in there? And it's one of my favorite quotes. I absolutely love it. This is mine. I've done it my own way, and I'm coining it. And I give it to everybody I treat. And I texted on to them. Mm-hmm. I'm very personal like that, as you know.
Yeah.
I'm very connected with people that I interact with. They're just not finished with me when they leave.
Yeah.
They become a part of my life because I genuinely care about them to try and help them to move on, you know. But it's one of my favourite things, and I get them to say it, and it's, if I always do what I've always done, I will always get what I've always gotten.
Mm.
Rather than me saying, if you always do what you've always done, you will always get what you've always gotten. I want them to say it to themselves. The penny drops like that. And I say, think about it now again. If you're always doing what you've always been doing, you're getting the same results, albeit negative. What do you got to do in order to change the way you're feeling and to transition in life?
Change your personality.
Change what I'm doing.
Mm. Do something different.
Change your whole personality. Yeah.
It's like when I'm working with people in non-addiction services, it's like nothing changes if nothing changes.
Correct. It's the same thing, really.
It's the same thing, isn't it? But it's like you can't have all the fruits of recovery and a good life. You can't do this and have all that. You know, you have to kind of do different things and try new things and meet new people and have new experiences.
Mm.
But you know, for people that have never went through therapy, or and they might be spiritually stuck, as maybe me and Timmy might see it, you know, in terms of, it's not so bad, the life isn't so bad, but it's not good, they're not happy with how things are, they're kind of meandering along in a bit of mediocrity and unhappiness, you know.
Yeah.
Is there any practical things people can do to kind of raise their energy, improve their outlook, in terms of books, any books you've read?
Firstly, I would say embrace how you're feeling.
Mm.
This is happening for a reason. And you need to question, why is this happening to me? What you resist persists, and it will just get worse. And unexpressed emotions become suppressed, and this is where they become toxic, okay? Mm-hmm. So whatever you're going through in your life, I would normally say, when I'm working with my clients, I'd say, look, I now choose to just accept what's going on in my mind and my body, and I offer no more resistance. I now choose to let go, and I am open to change. It's a game changer. Mm-hmm. I surrender, and I forgive myself. Regarding books, where do I start? You know what a good book is for people that okay, The Secret Book. A lot of people have heard that.
Yeah. Mm.
Okay, and I think it's a wonderful book for getting somebody on the road to learning about what I'm speaking about, really. You know? It's really, really informative. It can be a game changer for a lot of people. It's a wonderful book to start off with. Another book would be Norman Vincent Peale, The Power of Positive Thinking. And it's one of the things I say in my talk. When he went to school, there was a new teacher started, so going back many, many years ago in the States, and he came into the classroom and he wrote up, "I can't." And he said to the class, all kids, "What's the matter with this word?" Nobody could get it. He went up and he erased the T. "Take away the T and I can." And you can.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anybody can. It all starts in a state of consciousness.
Mm.
What you believe about yourself, what you think about yourself, what you say about yourself, and what you feel about yourself. There's nobody to blame. There's no circumstances, situations, or events to blame. Some people blame circumstances for their turmoil and their doom and gloom in life. But there's an old saying, people that blame circumstances, the bus leaves every day.
Yeah.
Okay? Mm. So if you're going through,
you don't have to be the victim.
No, like. No. You don't. You got to take full responsibility for how you're feeling and whatever is going on in your life. I choose to take full responsibility. I accept what's going on. I offer no more resistance. I am now willing to heal and to move forward in my life and learn from my past so-called negative experiences, which, as we transition through life and as we grow, become very positive, what I call golden nuggets that we've learned from. And you're a testament from what you've learned from and how far you've come and how you've grown to have gone through what you've gone through and to be here doing this podcast with so much confidence, and your self-esteem has gone through the roof, and the courage that you're actually doing this, and you're embracing your emotional state and your feelings, and you're just putting it out there and being very, very transparent. Thank you. Couldn't have done that 5 years ago.
Five years ago,
I was probably thinking about taking my own life.
Yeah.
I was going to a doctor to see, could he put me on some form of anti-depression tablet, something to stop me constantly thinking, you know, and then my energy was very low. I was not well, you know. I was just not, but I was trying to show a brave face within the house and with all the people around me, because I was in recovery and I was a few years in recovery, and people would have looked up to me a little bit because I was of where I was coming from, you know. But I was in an awful, awful, awful state, you know. So it's
When me and Timmy are on this podcast, and when we leave ourselves vulnerable for people, it's for us too. This is very therapeutic for me and Timmy. We meet people every week and we're privileged to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and we can talk open with people. It's very therapeutic for me and Timmy to have guests like you on.
Yeah.
It's very therapeutic for people watching. But also, like, when me and Timmy talk about stuff that affects us, kind of show a bit of vulnerability for us. It just shows people that are watching that you don't have to be present as this macho man all the time.
No.
So there's nobody like that.
No.
Arnold Schwarzenegger didn't like that, neither is Rambo. Everybody feels anxious sometimes. Everybody feels fearful, hurt, insecure. Doesn't matter who you are.
Yeah.
Do you know? But there's a culture where we don't acknowledge it. It's not me. Do you know, the boys are on these softies, you know, it's not, it's definitely you. It's probably you more than anybody else.
I agree 100%, you know.
How do you deal with somebody? How do you help somebody to tap into that little bit of vulnerability. I suppose it's about getting a bit of a relationship with somebody you can trust.
Yeah, I get them to believe in themselves, and it happens very fast, you know, because, again, we're going through life, living from past experiences and so-called truths that were instilled in us from peers and family members, teachers, etc., etc. But when you get to a certain age, you can start to question these things, and they're not always truths, you know.
Mm.
But the things that have happened in the past, we hold on to in our subconscious mind. And the subconscious mind is the filing system for the conscious mind thinking, which is the mind that we're thinking now. So everything we're thinking now, we're planting seeds in the subconscious mind. Mm. And I liken the subconscious mind to a fertile land, okay? So what you're going to plant in a fertile land, you want it to grow into fruition. You want it to be the best fruit, for instance. You want it to be the tallest oak trees. So you're going to be very selective with the seeds that you plant in that fertile land. The same with your subconscious mind. Be very careful the thoughts that you think, which are seeds that you're planting in the fertile land, which is your subconscious mind, which will grow after their kind.
Mm.
It's imperative that you start to learn how to siphon through your thoughts, how to accept them or disregard them. Because, as you know, guys, probably 60 to 70,000 thoughts a day that we have, most of them negative. The most important thing, and people ask me all the time, Jesus, your intrusive, repetitive thoughts. I was there myself. I was like that for years. Nobody knew it like that. I was suffering from depression and severe anxiety and constant, repetitive, intrusive, negative thoughts from the time I opened my eyes in the morning to the time I went to bed. And you know what it's like, guys. You're trying to function as a father, a husband, and you're trying to do your job, and all this is going through your mind constantly. But I learnt, I taught myself how to get through all this and to get out of it. And one of the things I say is, with these negative thoughts and these positive thoughts, they're going to come. But people say, Joe, how do I stop them? You're not going to be able to stop them. Let's be realistic about this, okay? But you can choose what thoughts you're going to think. So when the negative thoughts come, the intrusive thoughts, you just say, stop, okay? In your mind, or say it out loud if you're on it, stop. Does this thought serve me? Yes or no? If it doesn't, I just allow you to move on. So look at it like a conveyor belt, right? Not everything on let's say a conveyor belt, a shopping conveyor, that's a conveyor belt, isn't it?
Yeah.
Shopping conveyor belt. So not everything is nice on the conveyor belt sometimes when you do your shopping. Not a lot of people like broccoli, right? But behind the broccoli, there's a bar of chocolate. So the negative thought is the broccoli. So you go, no, don't want that, leave that pass by. Whoa, positive, bar of chocolate. You know, be selective with the thoughts that you're going to take in, because, again, they will grow after their own kind when you plant it in your subconscious mind.
Mm.
So this is going to be happening all day long. Yes, it takes a bit of work.
Takes a lot of meditation, doesn't it?
And it does.
And building it your does, focus. But
it doesn't have to be that hard. Once you come to the decision that, you know something, I am about to change my life because nobody else can do it for me. I can get all the help from the likes of Jor and yourselves and other therapists and counsellors and psychiatrists who all do a fantastic job, and psychologists, etc., etc., and mentors, brilliant. But if I don't start to take full responsibility for the way I am in my life now and the way I want to progress in life, nothing is going to change. So I come to a conscious decision now and say, right, I am now willing to take full responsibility and to move forward in life and let nothing stand in my way. This is the way you got to speak to yourself if you want things to change. And the two most important words on the planet, I instill it with every client, I am. The two most important words. Everything that follows I am, you become. So if you're listening to a negative person and they're speaking such as, I'm not good enough, I'm not going to amass to anything, I'm just a waste of time. Negative, negative, negative. What does negativity do? It lowers your vibrational frequency. And we live in a vibrational-based universe, and everything vibrates at a particular frequency. Our thoughts create our feelings create our emotions, and our emotions create our vibrational frequency. A lot of people think that the law of attraction is it, but it's not. Behind the law of attraction is the law of vibration. So what you're vibrating out into universal consciousness, you're bringing back into your experience through the premise of the law of attraction.
And that's not an abstract notion, because if you're in a room, right, where, say, four of us in here now and having a conversation, and somebody comes in that door, they have to come from a funeral, right? They don't have to open their mouths. They'll bring down the vibration frequency in the room straight away.
Yeah.
Isn't it? If they're coming from a fucking a party, they come in, they're buzzing, all of a sudden, the mood goes up in the room, do you know? That's a kind of a way where you could actually measure that. It's not something that's out there, airy fairy, it's actually real, do you know what I mean?
It is real. It is, and fair play to you for picking up on it, you know? But talking about vibration and energies and that, right? I don't know what your take on it, that we're all one, that we're all connected. Would you go with that? Or
yeah, I would.
Would you be...
What do you mean by that?
That we're all one. We are all interconnected energetically wise.
Like, everybody is connected to the same thing. We're all connected. Through frequency and energy.
I understand.
Through energy.
Yeah. I do think
you know
what
I mean? That we are connected energetically wise.
Definitely.
Do you know what's very important as well? For a lot of people that probably wouldn't have much education around the energy side of it. We'll try to explain it a little bit. We're all made of energy, right? Mm-hmm. We're 99.9999% energy, and 0.0001% of matter. You know, like, all we can see is the matter. I can see Jor, I can see you, I can see the telly. You know, but I can't see his energy field, which is. A lot bigger than what you can see the matter here in front of me. You know, we can't see that. But I've often visualised, and I believe in it. I believe in it because it's science and it's the truth. It's factual, like, you know, that there's an energy field around Jor, Ron, you, and that just transfers into the atmosphere how we feel within us. So it might be negative, and that energy is negative, and we can pick up on that negative energy, other human beings, because your own energy will drop. You know,
so what we call negative energy.
Would you agree?
Absolutely, 100%.
What we'd call negative energy could be called low frequency energy.
Yeah, you're talking my language.
Do you know what I was reading recently as well, as scientists now believe that it's actually like we're not actually solid beings.
No, we're not.
Do you know? But do you know what I was thinking, right? Do you ever take acid? You don't have to answer that. Do you ever take acid, Timmy?
I did, but I didn't like
just
it.
Indulge me now for a second. If you ever take acid, right, it's a hallucinogen. Everything starts moving, right? Like, there's nothing is static. Nothing at all is static. Everything, you can see the energy pulsing out of stuff, do you know? Who's to say that that's not what reality actually is?
Yeah.
Do you know? It's like, our brain likes to simplify things, but our brain, like what we perceive through the senses, doesn't mean that it's actual reality.
Yeah.
Do you know, let's say, for example, if you see a bang and you hear a noise, there's space in between. A lot can happen in between. So by the time you hear something, that doesn't mean the bang happened. No, it's actually in the past already. Yeah. Do you know? So the brain likes to make stuff simple for us. So instead of us looking at our hands and looking at all these waves, no. It solidifies everything for us
to
help us understand it, you know.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean, like, and it goes back to this other book, the Eckhart Tolle book that I'm rambling on about the last 4 or 5 weeks.
That's good, though.
But he's talking about, like, the mind is helpful, but the mind doesn't tell you the facts. Like, the mind is helpful. The mind will help you put labels on stuff, and it'll help you try to understand stuff. But the mind doesn't know everything at all. You know, and your being, who you are, is much more than that. Your mind, and you were talking about earlier on there as well, around, you know, the negative self-talk, the thinking and stuff like that. Kind of what I've been doing out since I was talking to you and leading up to it is just, you know, when the negative self-talk comes in, you know, what the fuck are you doing? You're out of shape and you're not good enough
for the
box.
Yeah,
that type of thing. It's like, when I started reading that book, it's like, you're not your thinking. That's what he was saying. You're not your thinking. So it's just like absorbing it, like absorbing the thinking from who I am, really. So here it is. Now, again, this thinking now is helpful when I need to do an exam or write an essay. But at this moment in time, the thinking isn't helpful. You know, the mind sometimes is helpful, but other times it's not. But your mind is not you. and we're much more than our thinking.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Absolutely. I mean, you could say, like, I am not this body. I'm not my thoughts. I'm not my emotions. I'm not my feelings. I'm not my thought perceptions. I am the soul that I am. And the soul is the true essence of who we all are. That's your higher self. And I connect with my soul on a daily basis with things that I personally do. And a lot of people don't, are not aware of it. But your soul is the true essence of who you are. And the soul wants to have fun in this physical body, in this time, place, dimension. That's all the soul wants to do. So when your self-dialogue is, I'm not good enough, your soul is literally like crying in the background saying, stop it, you know, stop it. Wake up, you know.
Yeah.
You are not this body, you are the soul, which is the true essence of who you are. Captivate it, draw me in, you know, and connect with your soul on a daily basis. And when you start to connect with your soul, boy, things change.
Yeah, you become your authentic self.
You said it.
Yeah.
You said it, Tim.
Can I change direction?
You can, of course.
For just to finish up in the last 10, 15 minutes. Something that be very dear to both your hearts. Mm. It's around construction industry, mental health, suicide, because you've been in construction industry for about 60, 70 years between you. Do you want to talk just a little bit about that? About why in the construction industry there is a mental health crisis, that there is way more suicides in relative to other industries?
Yeah.
You can go on there for
there's over 500 people a year take their lives in Ireland. Just statistics, okay? There's 1.4 million people in the United States attempted to take their own lives. 48,000 people took their own lives in 2018 in the United States. There's 18 people take their own lives a day in the UK, primarily men. The statistics are shocking here when you try to look up, you know, 2019, whatever. They're just not there in Ireland, you know. It's horrendous. It's absolutely horrendous. There's a person takes their own life every 40 seconds. So by the time we started this podcast and by the time we finish,
it's probably 100 people.
Yeah, right? Do the maths.
Yeah.
It's really, really sad. Now, I don't know, Tim, have you gone onto a site where one of our work colleagues, I don't care if you're working up in Dublin or you're in Belfast, you're my work colleague at the end of the day. And we have that camaraderie in the construction industry. And have you ever gone onto a site where you won't say we're all personal friends and stuff, but you know the crack with the lads, no matter who you are, how you getting on, bud, you know what I mean? You'll have the crack on site with the chippies, the plasters, the masons, whatever, the sparkies, you know? You'll all have the crack. But have you ever gone onto a site on a Monday morning and one of your colleagues is after taking his own life the weekend? Have you?
Have I ever gone onto a site and it has happened?
And you've met one of the lads and say,
John's after dying, yeah.
I believe what's after happening, John. Yeah. I'm going wild.
It's more than once, like.
And the same here.
A lot of times.
What happens? How do you feel?
Like someone's close is after dying.
Yeah, someone close is after. Heart drops. Heart drops. And I gave a talk in another pharmaceutical company. And there was a man came up to me after the talk, right? Yeah. And as you can see, I get very passionate about what I'm talking about here. And after the talk, he said, he was crying. Everybody left the room, he was crying. He said, I wasn't coming in this morning, Joe, if you know what I mean. So I know exactly what you mean.
Okay.
And instantly I said, how long have you been thinking about taking your own life? And he said, a couple of weeks. And he broke down then again and I gave him a hug. And I said, come on, let's talk about it. He said, there's nothing to talk about. He said, it's after lifting. He said, I feel absolutely fantastic. I got disturbed this morning, if you know what I mean. I said, I do. And thanks be to God, the man came into work. But he said, he's coming in, he said, he met somebody saying, there's a guy going giving a talk on mental health and well-being. And he said, you know what I said to him, John? The usual old stuff, he said. What am I going to learn from that? But he said, I ended up coming in anyway. And he said, everything's after changing, right? Now, that man was that close. And I've heard that from a couple of other lads that I've given talks. And they come up to me afterwards saying that their son was thinking about taking his own life, right? In construction again. I've been on sites, right, where, let's say there was 16 lads in a subbies company, right, And I got talking to lads and stuff, as you do, you know. And a lot of the boys would have known what I was doing then outside of work, you know. And in one particular company, subby company, there was 12 of the lads on antidepressants and anxiety tablets out of 16, you know. The stresses that a construction worker has to go through, the trials and tribulation of life, trying to be a partner, a husband and a father outside of work and having to deal with the pressure in work. Don't get me wrong, targets have to be made. Money has to be made.
Would your frustrations be directed at the contractors who don't have the duty of carers and the employer to look after the staff?
Yeah.
Not just on the site, but the well-being as well.
The main contractors, because the subbies would love to have people going and giving talks on mental health and well-being. And it should be down to the client to make sure that the main contractors get people in to give talks. Now, fair enough, there's talks in Mental Health Week. That's just 1 week. And that's 1 hour, one talk for a couple, we say 100 lads or something, right? And it could be broken down. But that's 1 hour in 1 year where you're trying to help guys that are suffering. Not all of them, but the majority of guys, and I think you'll agree, Tim, are carrying something.
But my viewing on the construction industry, from my own experience as well, growing up, the reason I got involved in the construction, now looking back in hindsight, it was because it was an area that I didn't have to think, because I was using my hands so much, I wasn't caught up in my head, and I wasn't depressed, you know, because I was actually working. And I think it's an area that it takes a lot of men like me into it, you know. And there's an example of, let's say, this year now with COVID-19 and all these things, right? We had so many construction workers been out of work for so long, and a lot of these men are quite like me, but I'm in a different place. I can sit with myself, but I didn't always, and I used drugs and drink a lot to be able to sit myself when I wasn't working, you know, because I couldn't function, you know. But there was a lot of them were told to go home on a Thursday or a Wednesday, and they were home for 3 months.
Yeah.
And they didn't know what to do with themselves. Then you have the lockdowns. You can't do your, you can't go size your 2 kilometres or 5 kilometres. A lot of them were using substances, and a lot of them were doing the online gambling and alcohol. But there was a lot of them probably did take their own lives, you know, because they couldn't handle.
No, there was.
You know, and there is a complete lack of education within the construction industry about mental health. It's a complete, I done my dissertation last year in my fourth year around the mental health in the construction industry. I know that's very broad, but it was broke down in the subcontractors area. And the statistics there was one statistic there, and it came from the UK, like you spoke. In Ireland, you don't get information. And I think out of every 4 suicides within the UK, 3 of those would be within the construction industry, the males, you know. It has the highest, it has the higher rate than any of the other industries put together, you know, because of some of the reasons that I just spoke about there.
But I think, you know, when men finish work or finish school, like yourself and Timmy, 15, 16 years of age, go into the construction industry, become very skilled tradesmen, but they mightn't have fuck all life skills outside of that. Should you think it should be part of the apprenticeship?
It should be. There should be an awful lot implemented in the apprenticeship.
I think there should be
an awful lot.
There should be something, like we have a safe pass within the system for physical health.
Yeah.
Why isn't there something to educate people around mental health? You see fellas walking around there on a Monday and a Tuesday after the weekends in their heads. It might be because they have no drugs or drinking.
They could have snorted or gambled their wages and no one won the morning. The guilt of it.
Yeah,
I know the suicide might start to look as an option, you know.
Look at it this way, guys, right? And Tim will know, right? If you go into a major site now, for instance, I have a couple of 100 lads on it, right? And, you know, you have an issue with the engineering, right? How many engineers are on that site? Roughly. It could be 20 or 30, yeah? Okay? If you have a problem, let's say with the block work needs to be rectified, there's plenty of masons there that would put that right, okay? There's a problem, you know, in one of the commie rooms, comms rooms with the electrics, there's dozens of electricians there that will put that right. Health and face safety, plenty of them there.
Mm.
How many people
yeah.
can a construction worker go to if he's suffering with his mental and emotional health on that site?
There's nothing there. There's nothing. And, you know, I see a lot of these bigger companies being a little bit fake in the last few years with all this ISO certification. Because they need to have this certain amount of
work. That's ISO certification.
It's a certificate. I'll leave Jordan explain a little bit more, but it's a certificate that you get because it's where you have these certain kind of limited guidelines done and you're a safe company to
it's
work
like a minimum standard.
Yeah, because you're high quality, you know. But no, I wouldn't be great around terminology and stuff yeah. like that, Jordan, you know. And that's okay, but I do understand, you know, I do understand why a lot of these companies get it done. They might bring someone in for 1 hour to talk to the lads for 50 lads.
And then they can say
they're certified. They can get this cert and say, oh yeah, oh, we've mental, we help our employees with mental health. Mm. We've given this talk. That talk, nobody will probably the only talk in 3 years.
Mm.
You know,
yeah, but the talk that they're given then, are they actually connecting with the lads? That's the big difference, you know. When you're talking to somebody, right, you've got to talk from your heart.
Mm.
And you've got to talk from your heart and you've got to be genuine because people aren't stupid. So if you're going to talk to a lot of lads, you've got to lead with your heart.
Mm.
And you've got to be compassionate and you've got to have empathy for these other people that you do not know what's going on. And I always say, I call it the art of allowing, okay? Allow people to be who they are and what they are and don't pass judgment.
Mm.
No matter what,
mm.
no matter what, because you don't know what that person's been through. You don't know what that person's going through at the moment. So be very careful how you treat and how you speak to people, not just on building sites, but in life in general, because everybody's going through with some sort of a burden and carrying a cross. We should be kinder to one another. There's too much aggression. There's too much violence in this world today. We should try and look after one another and help one another out. Back to what we were saying there about giving talks, right? I approached a major company that I'd given talks on site and the feedback was brilliant and I was delighted I had the connection with the lads. And I said, right, I propose that I come in as a subcontractor myself and I go to your sites around Ireland and in Europe, okay, for one day and I'll give a talk. But I'll also be on site if any one of the construction workers want to come and seek some counselling because the majority of guys will not seek anybody outside of their work.
Mm.
Thought it was a fantastic idea. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
They thought it was. That's what I thought.
Mm.
But nothing happened. Nothing happened whatsoever.
It's just seen as like an add-on. It's, you know,
didn't want to know. They thought it was brilliant, but then when the dust settled,
yeah,
you know, there was an awful lot of guys coming up talking to me on site, you see. Mm. And when they're coming up talking to me on site, they're not working.
Oh, I see. And,
like, there's no better part. It's like, it's like the drug addict and they want to get into recovery. They're going to go to a recovering addict. There's nobody on site. Like, when they see Jorah or somebody that has been in the industry for so long at the level of the trade that's mingling with the lads, mm-hmm. the respect that, and the, do you know, the respect within him because of where he was, you know, and they're going to listen to him. You know, he's not this psychologist coming in that's after being in college for 10 years. He's a guy that's after being working with them for the last 30 years and now he's educated in the mental health, right? And he's going in there. That's why, fellas, we listen to him, you know.
Do you know what I was thinking about there as well when Timmy was talking there? In prison, and some of the lads in prison watching over, they'd know, like, but in prison, the Samaritans, they have a listener program. Mm. Mm. So on each landing or wing, you have somebody who's a designated listener. Mm. So if anybody is struggling with any personal issues, mental health or otherwise, that this... They can knock on the door and get the officers to open the door and let them down to that person.
Brilliant.
That person has his cell door open all the time.
That's fantastic.
And maybe if you could do something like that within the construction, for every fucking 15 men on the site, you have to have one listener. Yeah, you know? And everybody knows Joe is the plaster.
Mm.
Everybody knows Joe is trained with this. Jor is the person to go to. It can be done discreetly, and you know, what do you think about something like that?
I think it's fantastic. It's
a good idea. Yeah.
It's like what I was trying to get through to this company, you know. But I'd also said, do the top brass realise that I helped save a man's life 3 weeks ago, which they were aware of, but it was brushed under the carpet. You know?
Because if it doesn't make money to them, it doesn't make sense, unfortunately.
No. But I'm hoping to change that, you know.
Yeah, no, about the buckle.
And I'm going around it in such a way, I'm being transparent about it. I'm being honest and open to people. I know that, as I said, targets need to be made as directors of companies. I respect all that. But you've got to respect your workforce too. A happy worker is a safe worker. And it's all about health and safety today. Mm. If you're going into work and you've got so much turmoil and trauma in your head, you cannot possibly focus on a safe task and do it properly to your ability. Yeah. You just can't do it. But accidents will occur.
But there's a ton of science to back up. Like, if you look after your workers' well-being, then increase productivity. That's a fact. Like, it's massive. The same. Yeah. They're big into that in the tech side, the tech world, you know.
Absolutely.
They really look after their employees, but they make billions for them. Slow with the construction industry.
One of the biggest losses in productivity within the construction industry is accidents through poor mental health, and the other one is absenteeism, which is people staying out of work because they can't go to work over their mental health. They're the two biggest losses, some of the biggest losses. Yeah. A lot of things, you know, there's other stuff now, like the practical stuff, like poor drawings and bad design and all these different things, but absenteeism and what's the other one?
Mental health.
Yeah.
In the United States, against statistics, right, $900 million a year because of absenteeism and mental health issues. $900 million.
If you look after employees' well-being, then pay for yourself and then like some.
It costs a fraction of that to look after them. It's just that kind of industry.
Is it okay if I talk about something else? I think it's important.
Horse
and
bike.
Lads, and I'm not
saying, no,
you know, there's a lot of ladies and stuff watching, but
it's just BS.
If you don't mind, with respect to all the girls that are listening in as well, I mean, I just want to talk about cancer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Of course.
And I know the ladies do their own things and get checked out and stuff, but lads don't, they don't get checked out for cancer, you know? They don't get checked out at all. And it's one of the highest rates of deaths in Ireland is cancer and prostate cancer being up at the top, and you're probably 25.5% more likely to, you know, get prostate cancer by the age of 75 today, because it's younger, it's actually getting, you know. And I'll tell you my story. I was diagnosed with prostate cancer Christmas week.
Just gone.
I'm going to use this platform to speak about it. Which I think, and I'm so grateful that I'm here to be able to talk about this. So if I'm going to speak about it, hopefully, again, not hopefully, I'm going to help a lot of guys out
there. Definitely,
So I was diagnosed with advanced prostate cancer the day before Christmas Eve, just gone. And this is relevant as well about mental and emotional health, what I'm talking about here. Because, you know, being going training and everything all your life, you think, well, what do I want to go to the doctor for? You know, and I hear people saying, I'm going to the doctor to get my bloods tested. And I'm like, I'm fit, I'm training all the time, not a bother, right? So I hadn't been to the doctor in probably 15 years, to the point where the doctor that I had seen had retired. So they were at to me at home, you just go away and get your bloods tested, you know?
Yeah.
So I said, seven pains in my legs, right? So I said, all right, I'll get it done. So I went to the doctor, new doctor, absolutely lovely gentleman. And I said, thanks very much. And as I was there, I had no intentions of saying it, but I said, look, doctor, would you mind doing a prostate check, please? Words just popped out. And he said, no problem, John, I'll do that. So he did a check and he came back and I knew then straight away, just a little bit uneven. And, you know, we'll get you checked out, we'll get the bloods sent off and stuff. And then I got the call to go up to the CUH with my wife. And I knew what was coming. So he told me, he said, look, Mr. O'Brien, you've advanced prostate cancer. I said, okay, what are the options? He says, you're taking that very well. I said, I am. Okay, so what are the options? So we went through the options and stuff, and he said, it's gone so far, it's removal of the prostate, basically, you know. So, okay, I said, that's fine. He said, look, guys, get very depressed. Some guys might get very depressed when they're told, and after the operation. I said, okay, that's no problem. And the reason I'm speaking about this as well, because of what I'm after being through. Mm. I've been so strong coming up to this, which was a trauma, to be told that news, that I was able to take it on the chin and handle it there and then on the spot. So if you could start to train, again, back to young kids and stuff, if you can start to train your emotional states at a young age, you'll be able to withstand any traumas that come down the line, which will be extremely beneficial when something like this might happen, or a breakup in a relationship or a marriage, which is another trauma, for instance, or financial stress. So he told me what had to happen. I said, right, what if I don't get it done? He says, you'll be dead in a couple of years, he said. So I said, right. They were worried at home because I'm all alternative, right? Always have been. But the way he explained it to me, it was so advanced. And I won't say I didn't have a choice. I did have a choice, but brilliant surgeon. And the way he explained it to me, I said, okay, let's go for it, you know? So it was fairly fast. At start of February, I got the operation. I wouldn't wish it on anybody. Everybody has a different experience. It was tough. It was tough.
Can I ask you quite unbelievable, you know, that the way you speak about it, you know, and your strength, you know, to get through something like that, and the way you took it. But can you talk to us about prostate cancer itself? What the check, is it an invasive check? Is it fingers up?
It's fingers up the back passage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is the procedure that too, is it local anaesthetic? Or are you
asleep? No, you're conscious, and it only lasts a second, you know? And
but we know when you got it removed, were you knocked out cold for that?
It was a major operation. Like I was told what would happen afterwards, and I'm having the crack with all the nurses and stuff. And I'm very good with names, and I knew everybody's name. There was about 12 of them now. And when I came about, when I was up in the bed, I knew everybody that came. I knew all their first names, you know. They said, how do you remember my name? You know, I just kind of stuck it in there. I might not always get that right, you know. So I woke up. I'm gone, you know, I'm gone all. I went in, and you know what I did now? It's crazy, like. Just before I went in, I did 50 press-ups on the bathroom floor, right? You know, just say, right, let's take this on, you know what I mean? I love press-ups. And again, about, you know, we could go on talking about fellas saying there was no gym. Use the body you were born with. Use isometric movements, you know.
James does them in the bathroom before the podcast.
Timmy does dips for the photo. Yeah. 100 dips for the photo.
Which, yeah, that was my little story going in. But on a serious note, I woke up and there was tubes coming out of places where they shouldn't have come out, you know. I did tube up my penis up into the bladder. I had that for about 10 days. Another bag sticking out of my stomach, which was inserts into my stomach to drain all the fluid and stuff, you know. So I was having to carry that around, extremely uncomfortable. And for a guy that never took a drug in his life, you know, I'm literally drugged out of it with the medication, you know. And, you know, I went down a couple of days anyway, and I took it. Not a bother. And of course, I feel so sorry for the people that had loved ones in hospital that actually passed away, you know. Horrendous, you know. Didn't bother me. You know, people couldn't come up to see me, that's fine. But there was people in worse states that couldn't get to see their loved ones. Yeah. But that, it didn't bother me. It didn't bother me, you know. It's down to strength of mind, lads. Yeah. Honestly, it's everything. It's everything. So it's extremely uncomfortable. You're going to the toilet and you can't go to the toilet, and you've got this bag and you've got to empty the bag. And
what's the purpose of the prostate?
It's the prostate.
Do you know what the purpose of the prostate is? I don't, to be honest.
I haven't a clue what the two of you are talking about. No, so I just
prostate is. I know the prostate is a gland connected to the sex organs of the male. Yeah. And I know
it works all that. It works the erection and the ejaculation and everything else that goes.
Yeah,
with
it's
that,
a reproductive organ.
Yeah.
Right, so you won't be having no more kids.
That's it, yeah. No. So what was I going to say? I got through that, but I was left out, and I got an infection. I got a bad infection. I don't want to sound doom and gloom, but I've started this now, and I want to carry it through. I got very, very ill. I was at home, and I was that ill, they thought I was a goner. And I was that ill, I said, if I need to go now, just take me. Now, I know what it's like to be sick with the chicken pox when I got them when I was old, and the flu. Yeah. I know what it's like to be sick, but now I know what it's like to be ill. So I can relate to people that are going through illness and that might have an illness in the future. I was very, very, very ill. I got through it, and I came out, and I was, the surgeon said to me, you can't do any lifting, you can't train or anything for about 3 months. The heaviest you can lift is 1 kg. And I was left out on a Saturday after the second episode when I was better.
Yeah.
And Wednesday I was training.
Mm.
I was back training. Very light now, mind you.
Mm.
Lifting an empty bar, but yeah, it was up there. You know?
It sounds like the infection scared you a little bit more than the initial operation.
You know what? It didn't even scare me, James.
But it's that question, your morality or your mortality.
I was vulnerable.
Yeah.
I was very vulnerable, and it was like acceptance. I'm here. This is literally out of my control. I'm in the hands of the divine, if you want to put it that way. Yeah. You know,
I've read recently about people that are in near death, or they've been given a diagnosis that's terminal, and that at that moment you'll be the most conscious you'll ever be, because all the other stuff doesn't matter anymore. Mm. Do you know, all this thinking about what happened in the past, what might happen in the future. Yeah. It's just you're in the present moment.
Yeah.
What was your experience of?
I was very humbled, to be honest with you. I felt an awful lot of love, which I always had anyway, for everybody. You know, I just love everybody, basically, you know. I like to try and express that. Go ahead.
That's brilliant.
I'd like to try and express that, you know.
That's brilliant.
And just being myself, but I felt an awful lot of love. And there was three other guys in the ward with me, and I literally ended up counselling them, you know. I did, it was fantastic, you know, it was absolutely brilliant. There was an old boy next to me. He was in far worse shape than I was, and I spent a lot of time with him and the other two lads across from me, just reassuring them that everything would be all right, you know.
Yeah.
And that made me feel good then, because I was helping somebody, you know. Yeah. But I'll always remember the day, again, and I know I'm going on about it, lads, saying everything is a state of mind. It all depends on what way you take it in, okay. When I was told that news on the day that I've advanced prostate cancer, I was back home within 2 hours and I saw a client. And it was as if I was through nothing. And it just went on from there then again, you know. And it's still been the same. And I was up in the Bonds yesterday. I had to get a CT scan, and I'm going through 7 weeks of radiotherapy in, I think, the next 2 to 3 weeks' time, every day.
Okay.
Can I ask you this, and you don't have to know if you don't want to, because this just threw me off track the other night. Would you like to tell people how old you are?
Not at all.
How old are you?
I'm coming up to my 58th birthday.
Yeah, you look $1 million. Jeez, I said that to Timmy after I came over. I said, fuck it. He'd book in and handshake like Schwartz and he'd bit like a tank, you know.
I actually thought great condition. There wasn't much of a gap between me and you. Like, I'm 40, and I didn't really think that you were much older than me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
You look after your mind, and the mind looks after the body and stuff.
Yeah, like your body is a reflection of the balance of your thoughts.
Mm.
And your body responds according to the content of your thoughts. Everything, again, is back down to your thoughts. You know, the way a young kid, for instance, or an adult, might be talking to themselves again, I'm not good enough and I'm worthless, okay? Yeah. Your body is a reflection of the balance of your thoughts and your inner dialogue. So if you keep on affirming to yourself these negative aspects about yourself again, which are total untruths anyway, it's just a belief system that you've carried from the past, then you're going to become that all day long. That's why I try to instill so much about the power of I am. Switch it around. Fair enough. I'm not good enough. I am good enough. Get back in your box. I'm not good enough. I am good enough. No, you're not. I am. You've got to work at it till you get to the point where you feel it. I am good enough. And then when you start to feel it, you become it.
Yeah.
Put the work in.
You have a tough
no matter if you're incarcerated, that's an American word, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah. Locked up.
Yeah, if you're locked up, it makes no difference. Like I said a while ago about the circumstances, the bus leaves every day. I know it's not going to leave in the prison now, like, you know, but you can get out of any situation that you're in because it first starts in a state of consciousness. So if you start to siphon through your consciousness, your conscious thinking, things will start to change when you start to use your God-given right, which is your creative imagination. You can create everything from your imagination. like, knowledge will get you from A to B. Imagination will take you everywhere. Mm. And sometimes people lie in bed awake, dreaming. So when you close your eyes and you visualize what you want, with dominant intent, you will attract it through repetition. Mm. It's called living from the wish fulfilled. The more you believe in it, the more you focus on it, and take these seeds of positivity into the sleep state, into the subconscious mind is most active in the first couple of hours of a deep sleep state. And what you plant in that garden, that fertile garden again, will grow after its kind. So most people that are negative in their thinking before they go to bed, if they're anxious or depressed, you'll wake up again the following morning exactly the same way. So you've got to plant a different thought in that garden in order to wake up in the morning to think differently.
Yeah.
And the first thing I say every morning when I wake up, still in the bed, I take a deep breath and I say, thank you, God, for my breath. Without it, I wouldn't be here. Why do I say that? Statistically, there's tens of thousands of people go to bed every night and they don't wake up in the morning. Mm. So it's a wonderful way to start the day. Mm. And then I say, I'm pre-paving the day now, okay? I'm pre-paving. I'm taking full control and full responsibility of me. So then I say, I show an attitude of gratitude. I've been doing this for years. An awful lot of people now are doing it, which is wonderful, from all the books and the self-help that they're doing. But my own affirmation for that would be, you know, I'm truly grateful for my eyesight. And then I open my eyes to see the wonderful thoughts, feelings and emotions, the people, circumstances, situations and events that I'm about to draw into my life's experience this day, that will only serve me in a positive way. With infinite love and gratitude, I am truly grateful for who I am. That's how I start my morning. If it's beneficial to anybody, brilliant.
That'll be just beneficial to me. Fucking hell. Yeah. I know, you know, the other day I was thinking, we'll finish up down in a couple of seconds, Ron. But the other day, you know, I was getting so caught up in what he was talking to you about, you know, just about circumstances out of my control and a kind of a negative, going over a negative head in me. But I was talking to Gillian there yesterday only, and I was thinking about, like, myself and Timmy have signed with a couple of managers, right?
Fantastic.
That, you know, they see a lot of potential in me and Timmy, and we think about, like, where are we going to be in 5-6 years' time, you know? Mm. But 5-6 years ago, I would never have imagined I'd known the things I'm doing today. And I have to remember that, you know, the imagination piece you spoke about there, yeah. Use your imagination, don't be limiting yourself. Like, I would have never thought that I would do anything that I'm doing today 5 or 6 years ago. Mm. But you put your best foot forward and you think outside the box and you take on new opportunities. Mm. I suppose the point I'm making is what I have today is what I dreamed about 5 or 6 years ago, you know?
There you go. You know, it's manifested itself in the physical world.
It's like, what would it be like to have a good job where you could help people in addiction, you know? What would it be like to drive a nice car? Yeah. Or what would it be like to be proud, to walk around your community where you're not ashamed, where you're not looking at the footpath? You can actually, like, no, I can do these things today. So now I'm thinking, like, are we going to do live gigs in the Tree Arena? Are we going to do, you know, like, are we going to be able to talk with the president on a stage and all these mad things?
Yes, you will.
Like,
yes, you will.
What's happening? Yeah. Because the thought, the things I thought I never, the things I wished for 5-6 years ago, I'm doing right now.
Mm.
And the things that I imagine for the future, they'll happen as well in its own time.
They will.
We'll have you on stage too, Joe.
Yeah.
We'll do an interactive piece, but we're going to have to finish there. If people that want to connect with you, how can they do that?
Can I just say one thing before you finish up? You're only as important as you make yourself out to be, okay? Who's the most important person in your life, James?
I am.
Who's the most important person in your life?
Me.
Exactly.
I didn't say that now with as much excitement.
And again, it's not being egotistical. Yeah. You're not being selfish or you're discarding the ones that you love most. But for the viewers and stuff, if you don't believe in yourself, okay, if you don't value who you are and your self-worth, nobody else will.
Yeah.
Okay? And you can't give what you don't have inside.
Yeah.
No.
You can't be there for the people that need you either.
No. You're only as important as you make yourself out to be.
Brilliant. Where can people... Are you on Instagram?
I'm on Instagram, yeah. At Gerard O'Brien.
We'll tag your name and that in the description.
I have a website as well. www.gerardobrien.com.
Fuck it, that was very creative, wasn't it? Yeah. There's only one Joe O'Brien, you see. Well done, Joe. Best of luck with the radiation therapy.
Thank you very much.
And we'll be in contact anyway going forward.
Thanks so much for allowing me to speak about that. I'm really, really grateful. And can I just finish up that you're actually inspiring me, lads, on top of everything else. And full credit to you.
Thank you. And thanks to the viewers that watched the podcast for putting Jor on our radar, you know.
Yeah.
And it's the word by word of mouth. This all grows by word of mouth. So if you have good guests that you think would be good for the podcast, let us know, and we see everybody next week.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks everybody. Everyone. God bless.
Thank you. Thanks
God
very
bless.
Much.
Bye-bye.
Enjoy the sun. Enjoy the sun.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.